those are the sound effects of Godzilla's getting spikes hard. Getting hot and ready.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you who have seen Godzilla Minus One.
Anyway, hey everyone, welcome to Geeks One After Dark, episode 221. The last regular episode of After Dark for the year.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have one more special episode at the end of the next week, but we'll talk about that in a sec. This is going to be a normal episode. I don't know. I also don't even know what we're going to talk about. I figured, just talk about whatever.
I mean, it is a frustrating day news wise.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah. We could talk about, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Anyway, yeah. I'm joined here by, Kurt and Davina.
Hey,
next to me.
Hey friends. Hi, hey Kurt. Folks.
I want to touch Kurt too.
You are everyone who's watching, who's listening know that I'm being touched. Except for Jake. Jake's not touching me.
The person to the right of Michael touching him as well is, or no, right of Kurt touching
my, now he's touching me.
What? Oh, Michael, I am everyone.
Hey, what a new baby.
I'm not touching Jake.
And then there's Jake.
Yeah, I'm just touching myself.
You can reach him. What? That is true.
All right, this has been a disaster of an intro to this podcast.
Hell of a way to start end the year. You know what I'm saying?
No, sure. It's on par. I think it's
appropriate
reasonable
for this
way
year.
To end the year.
Yeah.
I'm sick of everything.
Yeah.
So and not in like a bad way, as in I've hit my moment in time in which I just touch me, I'll touch you. I don't care.
What? All right. Say less.
I could say
we're all just touching each other with our words.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Let me touch you.
Dog. Say less. This is GameSpot After Dark.
Yeah, it's GameSpot After Dark.
I just got done doing the GI show with Alex Van Aken and Marcus Stewart and Kyle Hilliard, former GameSpot legend Kyle Hilliard. And it's a family-friendly show.
Mm.
So like the first 5 minutes, I said, oh shit. And I was like, oh shit. I said, oh shit. Shit. Fuck. Damn. It's like, oh, it's all good. And then there was so many moments where I wanted to interject with like an inappropriate joke. But I was like, you know what? I'm saving it for After Dark.
Yeah, you can get that all out here. Yeah.
Remember there was like a time where people were like, GameSpot we think of as like a family friendly brand.
Who said that?
This was years ago.
Yeah.
So they were like, no saying the F word.
Yes, there was a period where we were
is this an eternal discussion?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, it came from above. We had like a meeting. It was back at the old office.
Was it CBS days?
It was CBS.
It was still okay. CBS days. It might have been like right before
that,
you
that
started.
Shit did not stick.
No, yeah. Like, they were like, we
fuck
really
y'all.
Want to make an effort to like not swear.
I think our biggest censor is like YouTube. We bleep out cussing because the algorithm will.
Yeah. God,
sure. I mean, it's
there's bad words.
It's always interesting to think about because we are a legacy brand. Like we've been around for so long, in so many ways. Like we're like, it's weird to say, I gain a lot of respect when I think of it in this way, but like we are kind of like a godfather sort of outlet in that way that like was there almost 30 years ago.
Yeah,
sure.
Start of the internet. Basically.
Yeah. The .com boom. So it's always weird to see us or like look at us as that, it's like, we're a family friend. Not that you can't be family friendly and like a part of the start, but it's like, we feel like, you know, we started in like Chinatown, like in like an office by like one person, you know, sort of deal. So it's interesting to always be like, yeah, I guess we are like one of the bigger brands.
You look at like, I mean, I don't look at the audience statistics too much, but I look at them enough to know that most of our audience is like, what, 25 to 35 or something that.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, I think they've heard some bad words in their life.
I used that those statistics to leverage some of the videos I've made, as in whenever I want to talk about older games, and they're like, we can't. Not the saying that like GameSpot doesn't let me do that, but like, you know, when you're dealing with certain forces in which like you have to appease the means of which you make something and why you're making it. That was something I was like, well, the majority of our audience would understand what I'm talking about. Like that to them, like it's generationally relevant to like what they think about, to what they're probably thinking about too. So I think it works. I think there's something to it there. Anyways, family friendly. We're not it sometimes.
No.
Like when you come to our website and when you come to like our video channel and you're looking for something specific, like to something like Nintendo, I do think we have a responsibility to make sure that that content is fit for those who will be doing.
Yeah, I'm not like talking about Mario blowing someone's back out like in a Mario video. I'm gonna talk about Mario respectfully. Except for when I was talking about Mario RPG a couple weeks ago, and I was like, yo, this shit fucking rules, dude. Yo, this motherfucker got fucked up, you know, fuck Smithy, we're gonna beat his ass. Yeah, that is.
Clip that and imagine, have that be the family friendly review.
Yeah, my bad.
Imagine trying to keep like a Baldur's Gate video clean while in the game itself there's like full blown sex scenes that are incredibly explicit.
Oh, I was, Lazel was getting down.
Lazel Minthara. The Minthara scene is. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. It is something else.
That'd be a good video though. Like I want like someone
the family friendly Baldur's Gate.
Well, like, yeah, the family-friendly gamer is my new character I'm going to come with. That's, and they're like, they're in a nice, like, suit and,
the
like,
family-friendly gamer plays Baldur's Gate 3. I mean,
and they're just getting, like, increasingly more
uncomfortable.
You're
pastor's kid. I feel like you could fit, you know? Like,
there's a...
Not the way I look anymore.
There's a nudity...
ruin that one.
There's a nudity blur in Alan Wake 2. I mean, that game opens with.
I was true. Trying to think of where the nudity was, and I was like, "Oh, I."
It opens with it.
Yeah, dong in that thing. Dude. Yeah. Wait, Nightingale is not circumcised, right?
Yeah, oh,
I looked carefully, but I think DLSS was blurring that.
The best part is when you pause that game, the menu screen just goes over whatever you were whatever you're last playing. And I paused that game at some point and got up and walked away. And my partner was like, holy shit, what is this? What is this pause screen they chose? And it was like right in a moment in which Alan Wake like gets to Nightingale's body. And I was like looking down at his body, hit pause. And like it's perfectly framing his junk, like completely like right there. And like Julian was like, wow, they really went all out and just with what they wanted to do. And you on the pause screen.
Sam Lake specifically requested that.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, I know. They're finished.
Nightingale's, his thing be thanging.
Yeah, he's ungaling.
Hey, that fool's not packing, by the way.
Wow, shame.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I'll say different strokes for
different
folks.
Speak less.
But like, quite literally, yes. That's what's up.
Family friendly.
What are we doing this week?
Family friendly. Well, cool that you're on Game Informer today.
Yeah, I was talking about our top tens, talking about the finals.
A word.
Which I could talk a little bit about.
If you want.
The finals.
The finals. I haven't played that yet.
We're talking about Alex Van Aken was talking about the cover story for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
Wait, that's public?
Yeah, it's public.
They announced it.
Okay.
Today.
Yeah. Cool. I think I saw Kyle tweet something about it today, but I didn't know that they.
That's what's up.
Swick.
But the finals. Has anyone played the finals?
No, I haven't.
I played the tutorial.
I played the beta. Oh, wow. I played like the alpha like last year and I was like, oh, this is cool. It was also like real jank at the time.
Sure.
But I like the idea of that game.
Yeah, it's pretty dope. I played a little bit of it.
Kurt, do you know about the game?
Oh, I know about it. I would like to play it. It is free to play?
Yeah.
I just know I heard that there's like literally a dude whose power is like he can just run through a wall.
Yeah, that's the heavy class.
I want to be that guy.
Does it still have the AI?
I think. Stuff? I don't know too much about that. I know that there is.
It's like the announcers are AI generated.
Yeah, because they'll actually like say the players' names.
Yeah.
And like base it on like specific things happening in the game. So it's very like, it's attuned for that.
Not a fan of AI.
Yeah.
As many. But I do think that's kind of a cool implementation that can't be done otherwise. Like, you can't really have someone record all those lines. That would be impossible.
I go back and forth on it.
We don't have to harp on this too much. The thing, you know, when you're using something like that, it's like there's AI that's being used to shortcut
the creative process.
Creative process in which somebody's designing and doing something and like,
paying actor.
That's another thing. Yeah, it's complicated. Like, I kind of don't really have anything to say. Once you get to the concept of like you're shortchanging actors.
You're doing things you couldn't do otherwise, but at the same time, you're also then
undercutting someone's creative work.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, I would prefer there just not to be any AI generated content. Period.
Yeah,
but. If they're going to use it, I think, and this, I'm not like privy to how the finals is created, but there's, you can create a voice bank off of a VO artist and then, you know, pay them properly, do voice work for us, and then consent to the fact that we may be using this sample of your voice for emergent moments
and get
voiced
royalties
in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the best way to handle it.
Yeah.
And even then there's so much like, hey, you can't use it for anything outside of this project. And, you know, like, there's a lot of things
because AI is so, it's still new. those systems haven't been put in place. Like those policies, those things written into contracts and shit like that hasn't really been put into place yet. But I can see a version of this where the voice actor would be properly paid and consent to it and understand what they're donating. Yeah. They're lending their voice to.
Sure.
And this is one case where that could be something genuinely different for how the game is presented or announced, yeah, or whatever. But
yeah. I do think too, it's kind of worth noting that especially with game development, especially AAA game development, like while the AI we think of isn't being used all the time, there's other forms of it that are. I mean, like you think of Starfield, right? Like in some way, AI like made all those planets. That's why they exist. A person didn't actually go through and create those planets themselves, right? And like,
oh, random generation?
Random generation, right? Like if you want to go back to it, it's like, well, you know, like they could have hired people to make all those planets, but that is impossible. Right.
Yeah. Or those could have, like, yeah, the game also would have benefited from not having all those planets.
It's true. It's true. That is a good point. But I do think it's because even you go back to Oblivion, right? Like that map was generated as well. That wasn't hand done.
Sure.
And it's like that is also kind of cutting out the artist there. If you think about it,
where
it's like,
well,
it's, someone's not actually going through this map, placing everything exactly as it should be.
The definition of AI is so like undefined that is AI and what's not AI. Like, it was weird. I was like using a bunch of services that when AI got popular, they suddenly were like, our service is powered by AI. And I was like, you didn't change anything though. Like, are you AI? Or did you just realize your thing like technically counts under the definition of AI?
Are you like AI? Adobe closed captions, like the Premiere.
Yeah, they're like, it's AI now. And I'm like, it's
you couldn't just not said before.
Yeah, well, that's the same. I mean, that's also because it's become one of those things that you say at a board meeting.
Yeah, it's
and it's become a hot word for people who are shoveling money out to companies and things, in which you just say, like, you may have been like, we've already been using AI to detect words and captions for in our editing software, but now because AI is a thing that like is on billboards to I don't know, advertise something to somebody who I don't fucking know. But you say that in a board meetings with a bunch of people with money, they're like, oh, I've heard about that.
Oh yeah,
I've heard about AI. I know about that.
Did you guys see how customer service chat bots are being like replaced with like OpenAI?
I didn't know they already weren't.
But what's funny about it is because it's just OpenAI, you can ask it questions that are not related. Someone was posting, I think it was like the Toyota like customer service for like some random town. They're like, how can we help you? And they're like, hey, can you like do this like complicated like math algorithm? They're like, absolutely. And then they started doing that. And I'm just like, okay. Like,
all right, sweet.
I'm gonna hop into like, I don't know, like, yeah, I'll call like Comcast and be like, can you help me with my math homework?
Yeah.
And they'll be like, you got it.
Can you give me, can you give me 10 ideas for GIFs? please.
Hey, I'm trying to write a video on Cyberpunk 2077 and I need some ideas. Here's kind of what I'm working with. What do you got for me?
Damn.
Thanks for calling the Toyota hotline. Here's what I've come up with.
Yeah.
And you get 0% APR on your Camry.
So the finals.
The finals.
Anyway,
yeah.
It's finals.
Yo, the finals is wild. It's some ex-DICE devs, so there's some Battlefield DNA
that
in there.
Levolution.
Yeah, but I think the finals does it in a way that feels very purposeful, and I think Alex Van Aken like likened it to a immersive sim in a way because of how like the destruction of the environment influences how you play the objective. So like the objective itself is also a physical object in the world, so it reacts to the structures, where it's placed, people can move it. There's like, for example, there would be like the objective would generate on like a certain floor of a building. You could blow out the floor of that building, drop it down to the bottom floor, and it completely changes the dynamic of that match. And teams can like hunker up and like defend the objective, whatever. But there's so many avenues in which to get to them because of how destructive the environment is and the way the classes kind of all have this synergy and different abilities around that. So it's not like I thought of it like Battlefield has like environmental destruction, and it's I don't want to say it's a gimmick, but because it's part of its identity, but it doesn't necessarily have the same dynamism in affecting how the match plays. Because you play a Battlefield game, you get long enough in the match, everything's just fucking leveled.
Oh yeah,
and you're just like, all right, it's an open field now. But the finals is like constructed, and like the maps are constructed in a way in which it's almost like Siege on a larger scale.
I was about to say Siege, because like that was what I loved about Siege, was like, oh, you can like blow open the wall and you can create like these like tactical areas that didn't exist. And this feels like it's taking that, but just like times 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's it's genuinely, because I saw the finals, I'm like, all right, here's another multiplayer shooter. It's not necessarily extraction shooter, free to play. It's like, all right. We'll see what this does this time. But once you start to get the feel of how the match flows, it's all contained like in a game show. So it's a bit like lighthearted-ish in that regard. But once you get the flow of how tactically you play the game and the different ways in which you navigate the maps and the environment, I'm like, oh, shit, they are genuinely onto something different and exciting for shooters. And like, I've been pretty jaded on multiplayer shooters at this point.
Sure.
I'm just kind of, I play Valorant and that's my shooter in Apex as well. And then that's it. I don't. Everything else that comes by, I'm just like, all right, well, fine.
I feel like the genre's gotten a little stale.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the finals is like refreshing.
Yeah, relatively. I mean, that's that also like, I don't know, that brings up an interesting conversation. I just think about live service games recently. And I think it's like, we've known for a while that, like, I think generally a lot of players are kind of not really gung-ho about live service games, but yet they keep coming and they can like they keep showing up. And I think we're at a finally going to be at a turning point over this next year in which like the industry finally like hits their wall and like has to acknowledge that live service games is not the future, and like Suicide Squad might be like,
I was gonna say, that seemed like the breaking
final
point.
One where it's like and then, you know, it's like I sympathize with the I understand that like games take so long to develop, and that when you begin developing a game, when a feature or a thing is hot,
when a trend,
like, is a trend, then of course, you know, like by the time that game comes out, that trend may be gone. But I think like talking about the finals and how like these things are sale, it's like, I don't know. This is one that like, this is what I was alluding to when we were talking outside the room about like my whole thing with Alan Wake 2. I know I always fucking talk about that game and never shut up about it, but I do think that like, in a year in which we view games, we're like, there's a constant tug and pull about whether game, like where games are viewed as a product meant to serve a player rather than like a piece of art or a thing in which you, that thing is allowing you to engage with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just brings up an interesting thought in my head about like the future of like live service games. Mm-hmm. The final seems like it could be doing something interesting.
I
like,
mean,
enough to like, so it doesn't have to bank on the fact that it's a
not just another battle royale. Yeah, it's just coming out in the scheme of battle
kind
royale.
Kind of recent like news example. I mean, Naughty Dog, they started canceled The Last of Us factions mode, which I was bummed about because I actually really like the original factions.
Yeah,
mode.
I agree.
But I also like agree with them where they're like, hey, we would have basically had to like pivot to being a full time live service studio, and we don't want to do that. Because like for me, I was like, I just kind of wanted a multiplayer mode.
Like, I think there is like that disconnect though, where it's like they were like, oh, we need to dedicate a huge amount of the team. It would have to be a live service.
And what if you
like,
didn't?
Yeah, for me, it's like, what if you just put need to be a live service? Like,
just keep the servers on.
Yeah, release 12 maps or whatever. Like, keep those sort of mechanics that made the original feel so fresh and like. Add some new, but I don't think we need like new maps all the time, like the story that evolves, all these like these updates and a battle pass. But then I also get the other side where it's like, I guess Halo's a little different because they did kind of say that Halo Infinite was going to be that and they didn't really deliver. Mm. But like, I imagine if they like put that out there and then walked away, the community would be like, what the hell?
I know.
Where's more of this? Like,
there's an expectation,
there needs
right?
to be a battle pass where it's just kind
and of, that's and that's what I was alluding earlier, where it's like there's this tug and pull, and honestly, that Naughty Dog thing is the perfect example to kind of piggyback off of that. It's there's this tug and pull between games being viewed as a product and like a thing that's like meant to service you and the player and like be a thing that keeps going, and like that's where like that sort of like disconnect of understanding. Like Naughty Dog's a great example because they're the ones who do put out like the single player experience. And that they even felt a need that when they put out a multiplayer mode, it had to be this service, a product that continued living on. And, you know, and then there's the flip side of that where it's like, sure, they could have just put out a multiplayer mode that we would have been fine and dandy with and kept the servers on and called it a day. But like, there's just the business side of it being like, cool, a team spent a bunch of time in doing that. Would that have changed the sales of the game if it didn't come, if it came with a multiplayer game or not? That wasn't live service? Probably not.
Well, yeah.
Like, not enough that would justify the means to put in the work for it. I
was thinking about this because maybe I might do a video on it, so maybe giving some stuff away. But I was thinking about just like the reason why multiplayer was like in games and how like in the 2010s it was this like way to add value to a single player game.
BioShock 2's multiplayer, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Like to like combat.
Dude, Dead Space 2 and multiplayer.
Dead Space 2. My favorite example of that is The Darkness. Remember The Darkness?
Oh, I remember the game, but I don't remember the multiplayer.
It had a multiplayer mode, and it's like the most thrown together, like just terrible ass. Like, and I.
Donkey Kong 64.
I love that it exists because I'm just like, who played this?
Yeah, that's definitely an exec in the room. It's like, oh, if you want to put that as a game, it has to have multiplayer.
Yeah.
My kids are playing Halo. Let's do that too. Yeah.
And the whole reason they did it back in the day, because it was like, well, it adds more value. And specifically, it was to prevent people from trading games because it was like retail. Cool. Like the whole thing was, it was about retail.
Oh,
it was
not really stopping trading.
Yeah, that was literally my next question. I was like, well, then what stopped them from putting multiplayer games back in the day if they knew that the moment the product was sold that was it? Like they weren't going
to
get any other
people from turning in that disc like right after they were done for the trade-in. That is why. But that ecosystem doesn't exist anymore. So it's like, well, why do we need that anymore?
Make you think.
And at the same, and all it did was like piss the hardcore like fans of those games off, like Dead Space, you know.
Because
from the gamer's perspective, it's like you took away resources that could have gone to making the single player.
Well, hey, here's
multiplayer mode. Even though that's not exactly how it always works, but like that's the perspective.
I think. But the interesting thing, specifically Dead Space 2, you know, a game I didn't trade in because it was so damn good and I wanted to keep it and replay it over and over again.
Dead Space 2.
Dead Space 2.
That's the thing.
You know, a game I did not keep and I traded that shit in because I hated it.
Dead Space 3.
Dead Space 3.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking about that yesterday.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Like,
but you know, like for as much as those modes are just like random ass like shit that like again darkness or whatever, like. I legitimately love the factions mode in Last of Us. Like I thought it was cool. It felt very unique. Like I think it had like a weight and a feel to it that no other multiplayer game has like quite had. So like, I don't know. Like there are a lot of things wrong with them just trying to shove a multiplayer mode in to like keep audience engagement. But I do think that almost like led to this in some, we ended up getting like weird creative things. Sometimes.
Assassin's Creed had like, super weird multiplayer mode.
Yeah, it's
that was sick though.
Even the Dead Space multiplayer isn't great, but it is like kind of weird and different because you like play as a necromorph and you're like I don't know.
I would like you to make that video.
Yeah. I would like to make that video. I basically just said everything I was.
Doesn't matter. But it's not. Hold on a second. Like, I could tell you every single Kurt Lager right now, but like, it's not. The whole point is that I would like to see that information contained in a digestible video that's actually, you know, articulated and thought out, and I helped. I want to like help you with.
All right, well, thank you.
The lost art of throwaway multiplayer modes.
I think I was going.
Not even that.
I think I was going to call it like the lost art of multiplayer included.
Oh yeah! Wow, just gave it away. Sorry.
We made the video.
Yeah. No. I mean, it doesn't matter. Anybody can go and make that video, but it's not going to be the Jean-Luc video.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
That's right.
I mean, I brought up Halo, but like I keep thinking about Halo because everyone was so mad that they didn't support that game. To be fair, the way that they said they would, or at least as quickly as they said they would. But like, to me, I was like, I played the hell out of Halo Infinite when it came out. I had a lot of fun. I played with a lot of people. I had a great time. And when I was done and moved on and didn't think about it. Like, didn't think about it beyond that. And I think there's something like missing in that aspect too, where it's like these multiplayer games don't always need to just be this never ending drip feed of content when it can just like I had so much fun with Halo and I'm happy I did and I'd have no desire to go back to it no matter what they add and I'm okay with that.
There's always going to be that funky disconnect though in ways because it's like the lifestyle, like the gaming lifestyle for so many people is like they get out of work and they don't have any other game than the one game they play.
Yeah. Sure.
And I think that's also just like the weird factors in which we like have to step back and realize that like it's, I don't know. It's, that's where it gets like super complicated in my brain. Like the perspectives of which like, dude, there's people out there that like don't even have a Twitter account. So like they're not like, and like those people without a Twitter account,
good for them.
They're going home. Yeah, seriously. They're going home. They're getting out of work and they're playing Call of Duty. And that's their one game.
For sure.
And like, or they're buying that one copy of Madden every single year.
Although
and that is their one game.
I think that isn't quite as true as it was back in the day, just because there's so much free to play. Oh,
sure.
Now. Like Halo's free to play. You know, Valorant's free to play.
The finals, Fortnite.
The finals, Fortnite, free to play. So you
Apex
do have
Legends.
You do have more options now when it comes to stuff you can hop into without a barrier to entry.
That is also true. But I am curious how many people, like, how many people still get out of work and choose to play all those games?
Oh, well, yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, if that game stops providing, you're like, well, I have many other games I can play instead.
Like, even for me, it's like, I see, like, those multiplayer games are the point in which I actually, and I think this is the case for a lot of people, that's just when I get to, like, just talk to people and communicate and hang out for a night. Yeah. And, like, Halo Infinite was that game for me for months. Mm-hmm. Just, like, getting on, not paying attention. I put on Fiesta mode, not pay attention, not care if you're doing well, and just, like, talk to people. And, like, those games cycle through for me. Like, Left 4 Dead became, I made an entire video about this, but, like, you know, like now that's Lethal Company, you know, Tower Unite is basically that game for me. Like,
Left 4 Dead is also a good example of a game that, like, they could have updated forever. They didn't, but, like, you go back to it because that game just feels so damn good. So good.
I played it last year for the first time in years, and it's one of those things where, like, oh, yeah, this is, like, there's a reason why this is, like, one of the greatest games of all time. Rules. And, like, there hasn't been a sequel since. And every single game, or at least for, like, last year and the year before, was trying to be, like, the new Left 4 Dead.
Oh, Back 4 Blood.
Back 4 Blood. And I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those. There's a lot of older games that just kind of a product at a time that you can't, like, recreate that magic today, even if it's, like, really true to that, like, genre or that style of game. Just doesn't hit the same, but when you go back and play that original game, you're like, oh, this shit fucking rocks.
Yeah, it still hits.
It's like your mind just transports yourself to back in the day. Yeah. Like, the aesthetic, the controls, the maps, the whatevers. Like, you can live with the way it has aged.
Yeah, but or the lack of new content.
But I did play Left 4 Dead 2 with somebody who had never played it before. Oh, recently, and they were like... Well, this fucking rules.
I think the reason Left 4 Dead 2 works is, and like, this is me maybe speculating. I don't mean to be, like, armchair game theorist here, but, like, that game was, like, made in a time where, like, you didn't have to worry about, like, a battle pass and, like, player retention. Like, the goal was just to, like, how can we make this game, like, as fun as possible?
You sell a $60 copy of a game, whatever you do with it.
Yeah. Back 4 Blood, it's like it's trying to replicate it, but it's also trying to have, like, a card system and a battle pass and all this. And it's like,
wasn't fucking trading in no Steam game back then.
Yeah. And so it's like, even if they don't realize it, like, it having to include that stuff will naturally, like, change the way that game is designed and dictated. Yeah. And it, you know, just doesn't work out quite the same.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Resident Evil 4 has Mercenaries mode.
And that's great.
You don't even play that, right?
I've played a little bit of it, but I'm not.
I played the shit out of Mercenaries.
I've never been like a hardcore, I'm going to play it all the time.
Mercenaries mode is like, everybody's putting roguelikes in their games.
Mercenaries roguelike would actually be really fucking good.
Oh,
wow.
Dude, I bring back co-op. Mercenaries. I had so much fun with Resident Evil 5's co-op Mercenaries.
Dude, Resident Evil 6 Mercenaries is like, it's really good. It's absolutely, that's the game that we were talking about where you can dive for no reason and like crawl on the ground for no reason and none of the enemies require you to have to dodge them in any way, shape, or form, but you could do it.
Yeah. It's in that game.
But on one more point about factions, it's like, they went for a large scale, like, huge production and make this thing like a very prestigious ongoing game.
Story. There's supposed to be a story involved.
Yeah. When you build that framework, you get to a point where you're like, okay, we either, like they said, you either go all in on this or you have to abandon it to move on. And I think, I mean, in the way these projects get scoped out, they're not built in a way where you can just like, oh, well, let's just make a pared down version of whatever we have there. It's like, we built the frame of this building. The building either gets made or it doesn't. There's nothing to like scrap from it. So at that point, it's like, oh, we can't just make a smaller version of this and work with whatever we got. It's like, well, you built this to be a huge product. So you got to move on.
No, it's, I think that's a really telling case for what I think next year we'll have, especially. And again, it's like, I think it really just comes down to waiting for Suicide Squad. Like, I don't know. I'm not. Straight up, I don't really care about, like, I'm not counting the days to play that game. I probably won't play it. It's just, that's not the type of game I'm looking forward to, but I can't help but I'm kind of anxious to see, like, how that game turns out.
It's definitely a game that's just fascinating to, like, think about and wonder about how it's going to turn out.
Or, like, a game like Skull and Bones, which is apparently coming out.
Skull and motherfucking Bones.
Has a release date.
I'm worried about Bungie as a studio for multiple reasons, but, like, they seem to be almost, like, trapped in that, like, they are the live studio service studio now because of Destiny.
And I'm
a Destiny person, but, like, Marathon, like, you know, I'm excited to see what that game is, but at the same time, I was kind of a little bummed when it was like, oh, it's not single player, it's an extraction shooter. I'm like, can Bungie ever truly go back to just making like a single player thing again? Like, I don't know if they can, like, it's or at least
too, because like, I feel like
they'd have to pivot to
people
make that
were
work.
So high on a lot of those like levels that they added in Destiny 2 that felt more like traditional single
oh,
player
it's the
levels.
Best part of those games.
And like, I remember talking to you saying, yeah, like, if they just put all those in a game and released it, it would be incredible. And I'm like, yeah, that's the Bungie I want. I'd love it if they just, you know, brought back those single player games.
Destiny's greatest hits.
Yeah.
And just a bunch of levels that you can play through.
Hey, we'll see how that studio does when the final shape comes out. I'm real nervous about
it. Well, if there's anything that's really clear from this year is that games development needs to change. Like the sustainability of why you even have a studio and the people you have at your studio.
I feel like that's kind of the state of the whole world. I mean, think about movies isn't the same way. Or yep. It feels like there's a lot of like... realizing that like the ways we've been going on the path of certain things just like is not working anymore.
Nope. No, capitalism's bad, dog.
Yeah. I mean, look at Marvel movies and how like that shit's just like not hitting at all. No one cares anymore. Like
exhaustion, but there's a pipeline in which those things are made and
it takes forever for that stuff to pivot.
And then apparently Godzilla Minus One was like made for like $15 million.
Oh, yeah. Fucking so good.
Looks incredible.
And just looks amazing. And then this week it turns out that it did more money. It grossed more money here in the US than it even did in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
I mean, of course, the film markets are way different between here and in Japan, but like,
wasn't the movie too? It was only supposed to like be here for a weekend, but it ended up getting extended and extended because so many people would go to see it.
Yeah, like it grossed $20 million in Japan or something of that nature, and then it grossed, I think, like $30 million here. So, again, it's like one of those things where I saw its budget online, I was like, that's a misprint. That this film was not made for $15 million. Like, there's no way.
There's like a strategy that a lot of like A24 does this in Blumhouse where they make really cheap horror films, but horror films usually can be made pretty cheaply and then they'll like almost guaranteed a return. You know, you make a horror movie for $10 million, you are 100% making that back.
Yep.
And if you're lucky, you might make a lot more back. And there's always been this idea that's like, oh, it only works for horror movies. But after seeing Godzilla, I'm like, they could do this.
No.
On the flip side, I hope everyone got paid well, you know, for making that. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, again, so I'm not going to speak for the Japanese market, but I think it's like the reflection of like the American or just Hollywood in which these actors are paid
hundreds of millions.
Yeah, their role in a film in of itself is more than half of the budget of the film. Yeah. So
Robert
Downey
Jr., right, was like $150 million or something.
Yeah, it's really? And you know, like Jason Momoa, like recently, like said on how like WB couldn't pay his salary for Aquaman, so like they're going to be paying it in other methods like over the years or something.
Deferred his fucking contract for Aquaman.
So, damn, can you imagine like being like a WB like low salary employee and they're like, sorry, we have to take away some of your check, give it to Jason Momoa.
So that's the difference though in how these films are funded. For you know, like I can't, again, I'm not going to speak for Japan, so I have no idea, but it's like, you know, we were talking about this, I love always talking about this, how like Drive, Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive with Ryan Gosling, that was made for $10 million.
Oh, yeah.
And then Only God Forgives, the follow-up, was made for $5 million. And like, what was Ryan Gosling's cut of that film if that movie is made for $5 million at that point? And then you start to think about
a
just
box of toothpicks.
Yeah, no, yeah, he probably lost money. Yeah, hey kid, hey kid. Yeah, he went and that's where he just spent a bunch of time collecting toothpicks. Hey kid, you want toothpicks? Just handed them out to everybody on set. But
and then they filmed it,
and you get Only God Forgives, where he doesn't have a single line, just handing out toothpicks to everybody. So you think about this, the sustainability of these things, and where the money is going. Who's really making the money in these scenarios? Yeah. And a film like Godzilla is made for $15 million. Yeah, I sure hope everyone who's involved has got paid what they were due. But like, they also don't have Jason Momoa in it, who needs
just
to
demanding lots of money.
Yeah. But Godzilla probably cost. He probably demanded at least $10 million of
it. He earned it though, you know.
Yeah.
Godzilla was out there with
That movie was amazing though.
I want to watch it.
Sure,
it's
is.
Real good.
Yeah. Sure
real
is.
Good.
Speaking of Godzilla, watch another Japanese film that hit the States. the dude and the bird, the boy and the heron.
I like that name better.
The dude and the bird.
I kept calling it the dude and the bird to like all my friends. Like, hey, I'm gonna go watch the dude and bird. The boy and the heron is the new Ghibli joint that came out recently. So it was.
I think it was like the same week. I think it was like just the week before minus one.
Important question: did you watch sub or dub?
Subs.
Okay.
So, the reason he didn't watch it with either.
I don't know what the fuck happened to that shit.
The reason I asked, just because Robert Pattinson plays the heron. Yeah. And I really, like, I've heard, like, the one clip that went viral, and I was like, what the fuck?
I saw clips of the dub, and it's really good. I mean, Ghibli dubs are always really well done. I think they have a spirited casting, usually, with their dubs. But I watch it in Japanese, and it sure is a movie.
Someone
on Twitter asked me, "Oh, what'd you think of the movie?" I'm like, "Damn, that's a good ass question." It's maybe it's just me, or maybe it was just like the state my mind was in at the time. But it is one of the more abstract Ghibli movies, and some of them are pretty abstract. But the way in which that story kind of starts like stacking all kinds of different things that don't seem to connect with each other for an hour, 10 minutes, like I'm waiting for things to kind of start to tie together, but they never really do.
Interesting.
And then the movie just ends. Like, what the fuck was that? When that movie ended, I'm like, listen, dog, I would keep it real. I was with one of my friends, and I was just like, listen, I'm gonna keep it real with you. I don't know what the fuck happened to that shit. And like, it's not like Ghibli movies are like super abstract or these things you have to like really wrap your head around. I mean, there's a lot of deep themes to get out of these movies, and I think this is another movie that is in that vein. But damn, it was pretty tough to follow. I want to watch it a second time. Maybe I'll watch the dub, and maybe I'll be paying attention to
Robert Pan's like,
yeah.
You're like,
oh, I guess. Shit, makes so much sense now. But the setup is like 1930s, 1940s Japan, kind of like pre-war era. There's nothing like war related, but it's about a boy who lost his mom to like a fire, and then he has to live with his dad, and then his dad claps cheeks with his aunt. It's crazy, dog. There's like first 5 minutes I turned to my friend, I was like, yo, he's smashing cheeks with his dead wife's sister. That's crazy. But there's much more to it than that, trust me. Some shit about like family legacy, birds and alternate worlds and alternate dimensions and boyhood becoming a dude. And you could tell that I really, really connected with this movie.
Boyhood becoming a dude.
And with the bird.
Yeah, the bird. The boy and the dude and the bird. Boyhood becoming a dude.
I think I'm starting to realize that this is probably the hardest movie for me to understand. I bet I watched it a second time. I'm like, oh, I get it now. Like,
I want to know what the list of movies I don't get by Michael are like, so I need like a point of comparison. Like,
oh my god, I don't know. I think I understand movies pretty well when I watch them.
I feel like you do too. I mean, I feel like you understand storytelling, and I mean, obviously, like you're a good writer and good critic.
Yeah.
So like, to hear you say that makes me like, what the fuck is this movie?
Yeah.
Because Michael is able to digest esoteric shit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yes, like I've seen you watch and play games and
RPGs.
Yeah, that like nobody understands, but you somehow are able to connect with it.
Yeah.
So when I see Michael not connecting with something, I'm like, man,
boyhood
into dude, man, what happened?
With the bird. If anyone out there or any of y'all watch it, please hit me up. I just need
Michael the cheat sheet.
I need confirmation. I need a guide for this shit. But it's obviously like Ghibli animation and art style is still like whimsical. I think there's a lot that is told through its art style. Mm. Oh, the widow babies. There's like little round creatures called the Wada Wada, and they're just round white balls with like, they have like little arms and little feet, and they have smiley faces.
Okay.
And they're so cute. There's like hundreds of them. And then something happens to them, and I got really sad. They're so cute. Aww. I want like plushies of them.
Give a shit about the movie.
I care about the movie.
Oh, okay, okay.
I want to know more about the movie. Okay. But I saw the little babies running around. And I was like, oh, they're so cute. They're like round. They're like little.
So Kirby's not, but white.
Yeah, they're like white Kirby's. Yeah. I think they're supposed to be Spermies. I think in the movie, like, they're a parallel for, like, children who are about to be born.
Oh, so you were literal about spermies.
Maybe. I thought about afterwards. I'm like, they're really cute, and I don't want to. I don't want to think of them as spermies. I don't know why I keep calling it that. Yeah, no,
like, you keep saying it. Yeah, you keep saying it like it's like an animal that I don't know of. Like, I don't want to interpret it as you just straight up mean sperm. But you just keep saying
nut.
There we go.
I never knew nut could be cute. Anyway, The Boy and the Heron. Check that out.
Cool. Bringing endorsement.
It's got good. It's got adorable nut.
Oh my God. Merry holidays, y'all. Do not listen to this with your loved ones.
Remember when we were talking about GameSpot being considered family?
I know. Like, oh, yeah.
This whole episode is like The Boy and the Heron of GameSpot After Dark episodes. I don't know what the hell is going on.
What does that mean? I don't know
what that means. I don't know. There's no connective thread in this episode.
Okay. Sure, yeah. It's just a bunch of loose ideas.
Yeah.
And then it just ends.
Yeah. I just keep saying shit, and I'm waiting for them to make a point, and then the episode just stops.
Did. Yeah, yeah. And it's beautiful. You have a beautiful art style with beautiful characters.
Well, it's interesting that we have two Japanese films to make their way into the States, both period pieces around the same time.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
But on either side of the war.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
it's just crazy. Any other video games y'all been playing?
I mean, I finished Alan Wake 2 New Game Plus, the final draft.
Did you finish it?
Not yet. Okay. No, I've haven't had as much time to play it.
No, and this is a positive thing, but I'm definitely like, done.
Yeah,
talking about Alan Wake 2.
Sure.
Like, probably till the obviously till the DLC comes out, but I feel like that game, it's in retrospect, like, so obviously it's very obviously like a Kurt Core game, like we've all known this, like it's been a thing that I've been looking forward to all year. It's been, and like, we all collectively are super into it, and it's like has very, very specific things that are very specific to me personally. So it feels like this sort of like this magical thing that was like made in a box for Kurt to some degree. But that game has affected me in a lot more ways than just like sort of like just the than purely just its art and storytelling and the things that were obvious to Kurt. And I just feel like it's been like a weird pillar of like the things I've thought about and talked about this year. I feel like I've been very attached to that game in weird ways, and in a positive way, like the final draft, I'm like, I'm glad it came out at the end of the year. I'm like, I think it is such a remarkably interesting way to approach a new game plus, but I I'm sure they wanted to put it out, I'm not speaking for Remedy, but I'm sure they intended for it to come out when the game came out, but I think it's actually kind of like a really interesting, cool thing that it came out 2 months after the fact.
I agree.
Is the photo mode in that update too?
Nope.
That's what I'm gonna wait for. I'm gonna replay it when photo mode comes.
You know what? That's a good
idea.
Dude,
there are so many times. I'm not a photo mode person, but there's just moments playing that game again where I was like, fuck, look how fucking good this fucking table looks. Like, I like was like in OD or Diner being like, look at how the menu just like plastic reflexes, like or like reflex, like, and then all of a sudden I see a dude eating a slice of pizza with a fork and I'm like, what the fuck? Who did this? Like, who animated this? No. You should absolutely wait for, I mean, I'm not gonna tell you to wait to play the game, but sure. I think waiting for photo mode is a perfectly apt thing to do.
Yeah, because I do want to play the New Game Plus at some point, but honestly, when I was playing through it the first time, I think the biggest reason why I want to come back is for photo mode, because I am a photo mode sicko, and then I spend a lot of time doing that.
I mean, there's like, because like the way the time changes in that game as you progress, especially in Saga's story, there's like moments where that, like when you're in Watery and that, like that orange light is like the orange of the setting sun is like, it's like, ooh, blah, blah, blah. It looks really
getting
good.
Watery.
Yeah, getting watery and watery.
Yeah.
But no, that's what I played. And I think I'm easing out of this year. It's been a year, and I don't know. I'm reading books. I'm gonna end my year trying to finish up some books that I want to get through, and chill.
I was gonna ask what you guys plan on doing over the break. Any games, books, movies, TV shows, things that you plan on doing?
George is gonna force me to play Baldur's Gate.
Don't sound happy about it.
Sounds like he's chained to his desk.
No. It's like,
welcome to your first day of break.
It's like, yeah. She's like obsessed with that game. She's like act three in her own playthrough, and we're act middle of act two in ours. But you know, Alan Wake came out, and I was like, look, I got to get this out of my system. And then she's like, all right, cool. So
but you'll be back.
Yeah, I'll be back. And I'm like, yeah, of course. And then I was like, hey, Final Draft came out. I'm so sorry. I got to do this. And then so she's like, all right, play Alan Wake, finish the Final Draft, have a good time.
Report back to me.
And then
the chains are coming
off.
Yes.
And we're fucking finishing Baldur's Gate. Oh. No, I am actually very excited to play.
And then we're going to fuck a bear.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. We did just recruit that guy finally. So okay. I can do that. Halsey. So yeah, Halson. Probably gonna play that. Other than that, I don't really know. I mean, I might just kinda wing it with other games. Mm. Jake, you were talking about it, but I have been like itching to play some past Remedy games. I was itching to do it before, but now because of the unfortunate passing of
terrible
James
week.
McCaffrey. Oh, definitely got me being like, oh man. Because
those damn trees.
What?
Oh my god.
I feel like incredibly honored that we were able to get him for Alan Wake 2. Like
oh my
year.
God.
Like yeah. That performance is like incredible.
It's
like I like there's a part of me that's just like I'm really happy that we got him as Alex.
The game wouldn't be the same.
I completely get,
like on every level of what it was trying to accomplish on like an introspective meta narrative level on like what it was like the what it was trying to say about itself. That game is what it is because not only because like you have the face of Sam Lake and there's that whole thing, but you have James McCaffrey. Like it's just it's impossible to imagine the game without it at this point. Let alone like its future projects. It's painful to think about the idea of like a voice that is like generationally important to every single person in this room because it was such an iconic moment.
And he's like so ingrained in Remedy.
Yep.
And all their projects. Like Chris Pryor was talking about how like he almost like on the regular listens to the hotline calls of like Director Trench and like that actually got me listening to some of them. And I was like, fuck, man. Yeah. Oh, this shit's so good.
Yeah. Thomas Zane and the
in the original, which I didn't even realize until someone pointed that out.
He's not as gruff.
Exactly.
He takes the edge off a little in those so it's hard to catch.
The fact that like he voices Alex Casey in Alan Wake 2 is just hearing that voice and like having played Max Payne as such a young kid, it's just like just hearing his voice makes that connection where it's like, oh, I know what Remedy is trying to say and do with this character just by hearing that voice.
Yeah.
And I can like see the comic panels in my brain when I hear his voice.
Mm-hmm.
Even like, and like there's the repetition of like in the dark place when Alan first meets Alex Casey and Alan's like, give me a gun, like something like that. And Alex Casey's like, no chance. And then he does it again
in the real
world at the same time. And I'm just, but again, he creates that literal bridge for players who have the context of Max Payne.
Yeah.
That like that's why it's like it makes it that much more impactful and like it sucks. It's truly terrible.
Yeah,
like it's a weird blow that I think like goes beyond just like, oh, he's a great actor and a great thing, but like no, like he's iconic and like a part of a character that like means a lot to the gaming medium at a certain point in time.
And it feels like the there'll be a piece missing from any future Remedy. Like, you know. Those people are obviously will make amazing stuff, but it's like
because early 2000s, like voice acting was in games.
Yeah,
it was rough. That's that is like in its very very early years.
Yeah,
I feel like it was like Metal Gear and Max Payne.
Yeah,
like that was the two right that you looked at.
I mean, for me, it's like not to do a disservice to so many other games because like Grim Fandango had,
of course,
there is something about that, like the mainstream churn, you know, where it's like,
I think that was the thing everyone knew. Right?
Yeah,
like, everyone knew about Metal Gear and everyone knew about like Max Payne.
Yeah,
Final Fantasy X like came out and it's like fully voiced Final Fantasy, like that's a big deal.
Yeah,
right.
And then in that generation is like you had Max Payne. I played on PS2 at the time, and I'm like, I've never heard anything like this before. Yeah. Like, who is this guy? This is so cool and edgy. Like, holy shit.
Yep.
And yeah, that voice, his voice, James McCaffrey's voice is like stuck with us since then. So mm-hmm. yeah, terrible loss.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing for the holiday break?
I don't know. I have so many options I could do. I probably want to get something or do something that is portable.
Sure.
So something on my Switch or Steam Deck, or I don't necessarily like bringing my ROG Ally places, just because like the battery is doesn't necessarily suit long play sessions outside of an away from an outlet.
I gave you a good suggestion last night.
What was it?
Xenoblade Chronicles.
Ah, that's right. Yeah. Chronicles 1. So maybe I'll finally finish Chronicles 1.
Talk about top tier voice acting.
Hey, don't talk shit about
Shulk, Ryan.
Ryan, yeah, yeah, it's Ryan time.
It's Ryan time.
It's Ryan time, baby. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'll do that. Shit, I don't know. I do want to sink my teeth into stuff. I want something that's like sad. Or not sad, but something Ooh. Like
okay,
Silver Case.
Silver Case?
It's not sad. I mean, that's a dark ass, convoluted, okay, yeah, confusing ass game. But I mean,
not quite what I was looking for. I was like. Dark as in like introspective and like maybe Max Payne is kind of that where it's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like there's a level of pain that a character is working through in
yeah maybe like, I mean,
want to play something like that.
Silver Case is dark, but yeah. it's more my whole I mean I've talked about this on the podcast before, but that game's more I still think that I still want everyone to play that game today because it is quite a literal reflection of the dawn of internet times, and I think it's still very relevant today.
Oh shit.
Which is why I keep talking, because I played it only recently, like last year.
Switch?
Yeah, there's
a Switch copy. Yeah.
And like, it's just so fascinating to play because it talks about like internet fame and like the forming celebrities all over this concept.
Okay.
But it's very rooted in 2K internet, Dawn internet, and it's just wild to see how things can still be. Yeah. Reflective and relevant, but
if I play Silver Case, you have to watch Serial Experiments.
I was just thinking about last night. Don't worry.
Yeah,
it's online. Trust me, it's still there. It's still there. It's still there.
Yeah. There's a lot I wanna dive into. Just trying to make a decision is damn near impossible. Sure. So, but yeah, I'm gonna be traveling quite a bit, so I need something portable. Mm. If anyone has any suggestions,
you talking about sad stuff or just like introspective? Yeah. Made me realize I still have not played Hellblade.
Because
that's coming out.
That's a good moan.
So I should really play
it. It's also like only 5 hours.
Yeah, it's like really short. Yeah.
And it has like some really cool combat. I think the combat in the game rules.
I should definitely play that.
Yeah. Hellblade 2 is on the horizon, kind of.
Yeah.
Well,
good use of multimedia too.
Very good use of multimedia.
Yeah, you know what that might they might kind of scratch a similar
honestly. I do think there is like a weird cool parallel if you want to like continue that feeling of something like Alan Wake 2. And Hellblade is a really cool way to do it because there's a lot of
Luke's putting off Baldur's Gate again.
Oh, sorry, Georgia.
Sorry, Georgia. No.
You've actually brought up something really interesting because, like, you know, in Hellblade, Senua is like talking to herself the entire time. So it's like you're constantly hearing this introspective in your brain, which is very similar to Saga being very in her brain, constantly talking to her.
Senua Saga.
Yo!
Make you think.
So
what did they know?
No. And then of course there's the use of multimedia and using like real actual, you know, FMV over double exposed over other stuff.
Yeah,
so that's a really good interesting bedfellow there between those two. And they also have this kind of very dire, close and personal way of filming or like the way that you interact with the character, like the camera's always very intimate. And up in your grill. Big fan.
Cool. What about Jacob? You're the one who posed the question.
Yeah, I don't know. I keep going back and forth between some things. I never got around to playing Spider-Man, so I kind of want to play Spider-Man, but I don't think I'd play a whole lot of it. I also don't have it, and I don't want to pay $70.
$70.
Yeah. I do own Jedi Survivor, and I never finished that. Now that that's fixed, I might check that out. Mm-hmm. But also, part of me just wants to like not play games and just watch movies and read, and I'll probably bring my Switch and play when
Pokemon.
I'm home. Yeah, play Pokemon and and experiences there because I feel like they're not as commanding as sitting in front of a console and playing like some deep story. I want to finish Paranormasite.
Hell yeah.
And that's a good one on Switch. So
yeah,
I honestly don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's too much shit, man.
It's weird. Previous years, I feel like I always have like a schedule, not a schedule, but like a strategy. It's like, okay, here's what I'm going to play over Thanksgiving break. Here's what I'm going to play over the breaks. And this year, I'm like, I don't know. There's a lot.
I think I've just gotten better about letting games go.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I used to just always be like, no, I have to like eventually come back to that. And I just like have this list that like grows and grows.
Yeah, I do this thing where I wait 20 years.
And then you're really into it.
Yeah, and then you have your kind of your little nostalgic kick. And you'd be like, oh, what about all those games I missed? And then you, like I did last year, I only played games from 20 years prior that I never actually played when I was younger.
What if next year for 2024, which we shouldn't do because 2024 is a very busy year, but what if we just like,
play games
from 2004.
Yes. Hey man, Resident Evil 4.
Yeah. Wait, no. Resident Evil 4 is 2005.
Oh, it's 2005.
Yeah, no. 2004 though is
Half-Life 2,
Doom 3, one of the GTAs. I think San Andreas maybe.
Yeah, San Andreas was 2004. The first Far Cry.
I'm on board. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Also, you just reminded me
We
did the backlog thing at the beginning of the year.
I was about to bring that up.
And we completely that fell off so hard.
Why
that
did
not
that
happen.
Up?
I feel apologies to
everyone. Oh, what is that?
We had a thing at the beginning of the year where we're like, yo, we're gonna do this cool thing. We're gonna pick 5 games.
Oh, interesting.
We've been meaning to play forever. And we'll try and play them throughout the year. We'll come back at the end of the year and we'll talk about them. I didn't play fucking any of that shit because guess what? This year
was a lot
fucking much.
Yeah, I also am, and I always have this habit like fuck your backlog, where it's always like if you don't feel compelled to play that game, I have this whole compulsion thing about playing. If you don't want to play a game, you don't want to play a game. But I will say is like I don't so much have a backlog as like there's games that I discover over time that I missed and never even heard, never even really knew that I then go out of my way to play. I think I'm like caught up in a weird way, like in what like has compelled me to want to play something. Sure. There's the only one that's lingering that I have not played, and I keep kind of dragging my feet on it because I want to play it on the console with the TV proper, is Parasite Eve.
I played that this year for the first time.
Oh, really?
Very good.
Oh, yeah, that's
really? What the fuck?
Yeah,
that's.
Did we talk about this?
Maybe a little bit.
I fucking love Parasite.
Yeah, that game's cool.
Well, it's the only one that's like lingered in like.
Dude,
the,
if you
that's
want
like a blank space for me.
Early 2000s, like New York City, snowy. I think it takes place during Christmas or like in the winter.
It's
like
a Christmas
game. It has that like. Because I think I've also talked about how like I wanted to make a video about like New York and video games.
Yeah.
That game has a. Great version of
cool.
New York. I love.
Yeah,
that,
I want to play it, but I'm being a snob about it, and I want to like
do a CRT.
I'm like difficult in that I don't ROM. I don't have like consoles to. I have like a thing to ROM games. Sorry, everyone, to legal world. I don't have like a ROM like a souped up. I don't have like a what do you call it modded PS1.
Yes.
I don't want one.
Right.
I'm being stubborn like that.
I have one, but you know. Yeah.
I know. I'm being annoying, but I would like to play it that way, like on with the PlayStation controller on the PlayStation 1 with the CRT.
That's how I did. It was good. It was a good time.
Scan lines.
Wait, do you have a CRT?
Yeah, baby. CRT
VHS
combo, but I don't
have. That's right. What the fuck am I talking? You leave movies on VHS and you fall asleep to
them. Yeah, the fireplace ambiance VHS that I have.
That's how you also discovered there was some. Illicit activities in one of the VHS tapes you received.
Oh yeah, found in a dump, found in a garbage can behind my apartment.
You know,
now I own it for some reason.
Oh yeah, that's right. John,
yeah, you got it for your birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy birthday. I think I really, really at the end of the day for this Christmas break, I just want creative time. I'm a drawing writer boy, and I would like to just finally like I don't know. Take a week to do that and not think about
space, man. Because
this
feels like I'm speaking for myself. It's like for the past like half the year, it's just like I've had no space for myself at all. And maybe now's the time. Yeah, I mean, part of it is also just because of like being involved in the industry. It's just like one thing after the other, and so time passes. And you look back, like, what the fuck was I doing for the past 6 months?
I mean, dude, this year is like. Like, we're literally, like, a day before we go on break, and, like, there's still shit happening in the news cycle that's just, like,
I know.
Like, I feel like other years, like, that shit's over by now, but it's like, it's still happening.
No, I'm making an end of the year video.
Everyone relax.
And every scene, and like, I've already recorded the VO for it, and like, I've already sourced all the, like, all the B-roll for it, but every morning I wake up, I add something to the script.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I even have a joke. Well, I have a joke towards the end of that. I won't spoil it here, but it's like, you think it's over and it's like, oh, wait, no, actually, it's just kidding. Like, this happened. Embracer did this, or this leak happened, or this actor died. And it's just every single day something new.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Maybe today's the day.
It's not, because the Insomniac leaks.
Well, yeah, that maybe that's the last thing.
That's
yeah.
the last thing.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man. What the fuck?
Ugh.
Yeah.
2023 was, people will keep saying that it is the best year in video games. It is also the worst.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep, yep.
And it's time for it to end. Like this podcast.
Yeah, it's time for us to like go and chill.
Let's end like the dude and the bird. And
the dude and the bird.
Bye.
Spermies.
The spermies. And your dad now dates your aunt. Yo, the aunt is bad in that movie, though. She's like, yo. This fool's pulling a 10. He's all right. But like, he's pulling a 10? Goddamn. Anyway,
that has been GameSpot After Dark. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and thank you for listening for the whole year.
This family-friendly episode.
We do have one more special episode going up before the year ends. We did Video Game Trivia 2023 edition with Jacob McCourt, who is one of the moderators for the GameSpot After Dark Discord, or just GameSpot Discord. That was a ton of fun. We filmed that yesterday. So tune in to see who wins video game trivia. No spoilers, but yeah, that was a cool time. So shout out to Jacob for doing that for us. That was awesome. And, yeah, we'll see you all in 2024.
Yeah. We'll see you all in 2024.
See you next year.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
See ya.